Well, I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Frank Mufflin. Welcome, Frank.
Thanks, Michael.
Now, you're the, not sure if number two ward councillor for Hilton's the right expression, but you were the most recently elected of the two councillors.
Yeah, that's correct. For each ward in Freo, there are two. And yeah, I'm the most recent one for Hilton Ward, coming on in October last year.
Also recent, and so much has happened, Frank.
I know, I've had so much, COVID has had such impact on so many people, but there's been so much to learn from that time being on council. It's I suspect I've learnt a lot more in the last few months than an ordinary councillor coming on during another time.
That's a very interesting observation to make. I hadn't thought about that, but I can see how that would be true in so many ways. You can't assume that anything's functioning as it always did. In order to understand the implications of COVID, you need to come to grips with whatever area of the Fremantle City Council's operation you're dealing with. And you're all in the same position, I suppose, whether you've been a councillor for 20 years or 1 year or less.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, the examples of really then understanding how the parts of the council or the city operate, like going into detail around the art centre or the leisure centre and going, okay, well, what's the implications of COVID for the leisure centre? How can it function with restrictions in place? What are, what are the cost implications? Can we even, open the doors with X number of people in that facility? And what does that mean for the broader city? Those kind of things. And then being able to make a call on, okay, are we comfortable that facility operates at a whatever cost it is to the city for this number of people coming in the door and how it all fits together.
And there are so many dimensions. There's the economic dimension that you're mentioning. There's this desire that everyone has to get people out and doing things that they used to do, which is really about communities' mental health and individuals' mental health, I suppose, everyone wanting to be there. Do you make a prediction? Do you think it's going to be as late as another 12 months before we see things back to wherever the new plateau is?
I'm actually quite optimistic.
Good.
That we will see Western Australia and then Fremantle as part of that returning to normal much sooner than we expect. We will have a reduction, of course, in the number of people in town from a tourist perspective.
Yes.
Certainly less international tourists, but the opportunities that come for local people to be making the most of Freo. I know there's a lot of pent up energy that people have. And yes, we're most probably going to see a spike in activity over the next few weeks when the lights of nightclubs, gigs come back on. And then as we go into the normal winter lull, if you like, we'll see a reduction in that. But I also think one of the things that we've learned through the COVID experience is the value of community. And I certainly have noticed, and particularly in that early period, in that lockdown time, that everyone was out and about. Even though we were told to stay home, we were out and about doing that, walking around the suburbs kind of thing.
Yes.
And people would walk past and there was that knowing nod, hello, that wave, that smile of being in a shared situation. And I think some of that's really going to carry through to how we respond and how we come out the other side.
Now, how did you get into this local government business? Take us back to last October. When did you decide to run for council?
So it was most probably, I'd been thinking about it since the beginning of last year, whether or not I would run, and I suppose the genesis of that, we were down in Albany, a family holiday, summertime, we're in enjoying ourselves, and it came to the few days before you come back, and your mind turns to what life is looking like, where you normality is. And as part of that process, I had kind of had something lurking around in the back of my mind about my contribution to the community in which I'm part of. And I felt that there was something better that I could do, something more that I could do. And on returning, I had a few conversations with some people, and that was sort of a 4 or 5 month process, and thinking, is this something that I really want to do? And then come the middle of the year, it was, yeah, this is something I want to have a crack at.
So we'll come back to some of the particular motivations perhaps, but at that point you'd been engaged in a few community activities, and I think the Fremantle College might have been one of them.
Yeah, so I've certainly been involved in my local community for some time, and Fremantle College is most probably the most formal example of that. I have chaired the board at Fremantle College since its inception, and then prior to that I was involved with the board of Hamilton Senior High School and its closure, and then the development of Fremantle College, helping to bring together the community views around what that college would look like. That's one of my particular passions, not aligned to council, but about ensuring that public education is reflective of the communities in which it sits, and that education facilities meet the expectations of all community members. And so I'd been involved in that for some time, but also since I've lived in Hilton, I don't know if it as part of a change in my life, going from being young and without children to then being in a family with children, but we moved to Hilton, my wife and I, and there was a real palpable sense of community that existed there. And that was something that just grew for us over time. And I felt that I wanted to be able to be part of that more. So we became heavily involved in our primary school, local friends, neighbours. Yeah, there was just this really strong sense of community that exists in Hilton. And I'll bang on to anyone who wants to listen about how great that place is. And I'm not sure if it's unique, but it's the only place that I've experienced that sense of community.
It is. Hilton, as a very precise suburb, versus Hilton the Ward, which has got some strange boundaries around it. It takes in, what, half of Hilton Park, as
That's
we
right.
used to call it. Half of Sampson goes over South Street north and swings around into the O'Connor area as well.
Yes.
So when you were standing for council, did you have a sort of a platform, a manifesto of things that you wanted to see happen in your ward, or were you standing more as a representative of the people there on the council in relation to the broader city of Fremantle area?
I think my position at the time was more so to the latter. About yes. being a representative and to be able to demonstrate to people in the Hilton ward the characteristics and the values that I brought to the table, and that I would use as part of my representation rather than being a specific project. And I'm actually quite happy that that is something that I did do, because one of the challenges when you then go on council is to go and understand what is it that you as an individual councillor can achieve, and how do you make those things happen?
Yes.
And there are limitations to be able to do that. So I certainly went out quite early as part of the campaign and spent a lot of time in Sampson, because that wasn't an area that I did live in. And as you say, the Hilton ward is broken up into most probably three areas: the Hilton aspect, Sampson, and then north to O'Connor. And Sampson was one which I didn't have a presence in, and I wanted to go and speak to people. And I didn't go there saying I understood everything that was happening in Sampson, but what I did do and did say to people is, explain to me, I would like to understand from you what is important to you here in Sampson, and what would you like to be able to see taken forward to council?
One of the most wonderful things about that Sampson area is the Sampson Park.
It's beautiful.
It's magnificent, and it's one of those areas, and there are quite a few around Fremantle, which are well-kept secrets.
I think Sampson Park is most probably one of the greatest kept secrets, and I'm a bit conflicted about whether it should be a well-kept secret or it's something that we should publicise. I suspect the people in Sampson would like some focus, but equally, you know, that's their little little patch. We spent some time there during the COVID period looking for places, you know, to walk and the like. And I've got three young daughters, and we would spend a couple of days just walking through Sampson Park, and the things that you can find in there are incredible. Like, we had a period where we were, for some reason, just focused on bees. And if you just looked up in those trees, the number of beehives and activity you would find, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge huge fan of Banksias as well. And going through there, there's a multitude of different species of Banksias. It's a beautiful place. And the people of Sampson, they're very passionate about that park and their use and the conservation of it.
Well, I play pickleball infrequently at the moment at the Sampson Recreation
Do I ask
Centre.
What pickleball is?
Well, people should Google pickleball and have a look at the videos. It's played indoors on a court about the size of a badminton court with a net about the same size as a tennis net.
Right.
With bats or paddles, which are bigger than table tennis and smaller than a tennis racket, and with a wiffle ball. So it's a cross between badminton, tennis, table tennis.
Right, okay, this hybrid.
It's just a great game. Anyway, I digress. So you come to council, and what particular skills have you brought from your everyday life and the work that you have been engaged in?
So my background is in a corporate environment, most recently in the resources sector and working in big business. And part of my work there particularly has been how those companies engage with communities where mining operations are and how they understand what the issues might be and how they can be mitigated and enhanced. So for me, I suppose I felt that I brought a number of aspects to and bring a number of aspects to council. One is understanding how those how organisations work, and particularly to bring a different lens from a corporate perspective to local government and ask questions about why are we doing things in a particular fashion, why can't it be done in a different way, that kind of approach. Equally, and I think this one is important for being a councillor, is having worked in a large organisation and being a community member about developing relationships.
Take, at least in my experience, and this may not be apposite, a large resource company operating in northwestern Australia, typically the Pilbara, where there are towns already, but most of them have been built up and certainly very directly affected by the activities, oil, gas, mining and related, by the large resource companies. That interface between the resource company and the people who live in those regions, is this what you're talking about?
Yes, very much so. The part of really, some of the examples, and one of my favourite ones is working in and around Groote Eylandt in the Northern Territory, Gulf of Carpentaria. And that is certainly a unique place in Australia and a unique place in the world, the Anandiliakwa people who live there. English is second or third language for them, but this mining operation has been there since the mid-60s. And that had been essentially the first significant non-Aboriginal presence on that island. And the for want of a better word, the conflict between the life of the Aboriginal people on the island and the expectations and desires of the mining company, and trying to find the nexus between those two that provide an outcome for both parties, which is meaningful for them, is that yes. challenge.
So that is, I can see, a very useful skill and attribute to have, your ability to communicate with citizens and residents of a place. Where we live in an age where very often the citizens and the residents of places feel alienated from the authorities, from the government or or whatever. We're living through the age of Trump, where he came in apparently to clean out the swamp. I'm not sure whether the swamp's got
deeper. It was going to fill the swamp, and I think it got filled with something.
It got filled with something. But do you have a sense in Fremantle, thinking about the place where we live,
yes,
that there's the same sense of uncertainty by people about their local government?
I'm not sure if there's a sense of uncertainty, but one thing that varies across different parts of Fremantle is that level of engagement with the local government.
Yes.
And or people's feelings about that level of engagement. And this was certainly something that, as part of campaigning, that I learnt about, is that the further east you travelled from the city centre, that feeling grew. So if you were to draw that graph kilometres along the x-axis from the centre of Fremantle and distrust slash engagement on the y-axis, it would certainly be trending up as you moved along that x-axis. And in Sampson particularly, there is a sense of Fremantle. A lot of the people who live in Sampson historically were people who grew up in the likes of South Fremantle. And then they might have gone to high school here in Fremantle. And then when they moved out of the family home, as an example, they built their first home in Sampson. And these are people who look nostalgically at Fremantle, but now don't feel as much as part of Fremantle as what they did in the past. And that's a challenge for the city of Fremantle, yes, to be able to wrap their arms around all people in their community.
I think it took me a long time to come to the view, which may not be shared by everybody, that the way we construct cities, and particularly where we put roads and the nature of roads, can so affect the way you feel included or not included in a place. Yep. They can be huge barriers. Imagine if the old proposals back in the 60s, I think Peter Newman told me about when I interviewed him a year or two ago on Shipping News, if they'd put a major freeway basically through the centre of Fremantle to go south,
yep,
so you divided it up like that, you would have just wreaked complete havoc and destruction on the sense of community in Fremantle.
Absolutely. And I think you're alluding to Stock Road as that barrier that exists at the moment for Sampson. And if I was in Sampson or middle of Sampson there and you wanted to go somewhere, one of the challenges, first, you generally have to hop in your car to be able to get anywhere.
Yes.
Unfortunately, there aren't too many local facilities there available for people. But secondly, coming out of Sampson is, do I go west or do I go east?
Mm.
And the flow is kind of like, okay, most probably pushing people east because of that barrier of getting across Stock Road. And then traveling again, you go across Stock Road, and then a lesser barrier is getting across Carrington Street before you then, slide down South Street into Fremantle. So I think you're absolutely right. And these are, I suppose, not coming from a planning background myself, one of those things that I'm learning on council is the importance and value of appropriate and good planning that needs to take place to make sure that people's lives are enhanced by where they live and the environment isn't detrimental to them.
Well, the Main Roads Department put a lot of these roads, including all the freeway systems, down well before the Metropolitan Region Plan was promulgated in 1963. So in a sense, the planning was done, like the Romans put their roads in and everything happened around them.
Work around it, yeah.
But going from that sort of pet observation of mine, in a sense, to Fremantle, we've got a relatively small municipality. Attempts to expand its boundaries have come to grief because it seems people like small when they've got it, at least Fremantle, Pembine Grove. Getting local government reform is not easily achieved. And in many ways, we just love what we've got anyway. But it does produce this difficulty, obviously, as everyone tells me, for the revenue base of Fremantle, and COVID has just magnified and illustrated the extent of the difficulties. But That included, what are the, from your perspective, the big issues for Fremantle, whether they're in planning terms or economic development terms or social community terms?
Yeah, so I think, and again, this is part of my process of working and getting on council and understanding things better, but I have come to the position that the most important thing that does need to be addressed is that economic development for Fremantle. One of the things that I spoke about when I was running for council, with, I suppose, a limited knowledge base in regards to that, was talking about King Square and making sure that the investment that has been made by the city into King Square realises its potential. My view now is that that is more important than ever before, and it can be, and I do believe that it will be a catalyst to grow the centre of Fremantle. But the important thing, apart from that's good to get workers in 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, people back into Fremantle, the other aspect which will work to address both income for the city but also vibrancy in Fremantle is getting more residents into the centre of town. And this has been part of that strategic view of the city for some time, but I think it's something that we most probably need to find a way to ratchet up and really get it happening so that we can create that environment where people are moving through Fremantle regularly. They support local retail. So if you do have people living in the middle of town, they will go to their local store, whatever it might be, even if it's just picking something up, even if it's, geez, oh yeah, I need a new pair of socks. And it's grabbing that and, oh, while I'm there, I need a new belt. Whatever it might be, to do that, because we do know that retail has changed.
Yes.
And COVID's just accelerated that change to online and other aspects. But having people in the centre of Fremantle will generate support for local businesses, and we really need to find a way to make that happen quicker.
In terms of bringing people into Fremantle, as you say, that's been a guiding principle for a little while now. And indeed it has been for the city of Perth and most cities in sort of Western countries for some time, where the suburbs had predominated, the city centres had become empty places outside 9 to 5 working hours. In the mid-80s in Perth, the City Vision movement focused very much on trying to bring people back in, looking at the building regulations so you could get people living upstairs in the old buildings and making it easier to do that. A lot's happened and still happening in Fremantle. And I guess what the focus is on the East End, going down Adelaide Street, Queen Victoria Street, and trying to populate that area. Or are there other areas that you think are ready for a more dense development?
So, yeah, certainly that part down the East End is the one that is in focus at the moment. But I suppose there are other areas that we most need to look at and understand their potential. And one is, that, and it's, I suppose, an extension of that East End is what happened, and this is, I suppose, dependent on future decisions, but closer to the harbour. What could we see closer to the harbour if future decisions mean that Fremantle Port isn't as Fremantle Port is today?
Yes.
So that kind of space there could really take off, and I could see it being a new hub of residential development.
Yes. Mm. The port itself is, of course, a sort of a lightning rod in many ways, isn't it? And people have been talking and arguing, in a sense, about it. The Fremantle Shipping News was about to have the great port debate.
And, right, okay. You were game.
well, we were set up to have it just as COVID hit, and we had to abandon it. But and we will get it back on again, because I sense the government, through the minister, is just about ready to make announcements about the port. We had the people from Westport, from the city, and from the unions, as well as Fremantle Ports, to talk about the future. Do you have a strong feeling about it? On one hand, it might be that it's a given that there's going to be a change. On the other hand, how hard are people going to fight to try and stop anything happening in the port?
Mm. So, my sense is, and I don't have any inside knowledge at all, but my sense is that there will be a change at some point in time. It's about the transition and how that change actually occurs. There'll be an extremely strong fight from those people who don't feel that is the right decision to be made. It will be difficult because Fremantle is a port city and this is what we've built ourselves on. And being a gateway and so many, I suppose, connections that people have with the port, whether it's historically where their family first set foot into Australia or whether it was a place where people have worked for many years, their families worked for many years. We know that Fremantle, there were, you know, used to be thousands of people working in the port. It's not like that now, but there are still many livelihoods which are supported through Fremantle Port. And the character of the city is heavily aligned to that. And as part of any decision that's made from government, the way in which Fremantle looks post that decision is an important strategic question that needs to be asked, and I'm sure there'll be, you know, your debate being one that will bring out lots of views, but there'll be lots of views about how we best position ourselves as part of that.
Yes, it's one of the most interesting, I think, good faith debates that I've been on the edge of, and we'll continue to promote it, as I say. But people's hearts, whether they're for it or against change there, are all sort of good hearts. They just love Fremantle. The hard part is, I think, that the other actors, significant actors in getting things to happen at the port, are the Port Authority itself, a government instrumentality, the state itself,
yep.
Outside planning authorities, the State Planning Commission, and Fremantle is important, but it's plainly not the only decision maker in this process. I think it makes it for a hard thing to achieve outcomes. Turning from the port, what other issues are, do you think, of huge significance in the next 4 or 5 years for Fremantle?
One of the other areas, and I suppose this goes to that connectedness of people in Fremantle, Fremantle is characterised by its connections with arts and culture. Well-known hub of music, arts, that whole remit. And that's very valuable for us and important for us to promote that, to keep building on that. One thing that I think we most probably need to look at more closely, and this goes to maybe some of the suburban issues more so, is sport and recreation is an important enabler for growth of communities. And the prominence in Fremantle's history of sport is significant. Mm-hmm. If we look back over time, a number of great West Australian sporting names have either come through Fremantle or developed in Fremantle and gone on to great things. I feel that, and this is a personal point around sporting clubs, that they really help to bring so many people together, often from very diverse backgrounds. And similar to my commitment around public education and making sure there's a diversity of people in there, sporting clubs, yes, it's the one aspect that people have in common, but they could be coming from a completely different position in life, but they come and play a sport, and I think it helps build the capacity of a community. So what I would like for us to see is that sport in Fremantle, sport and recreation, becomes a stronger aspect of our community and gets recognised for that, and that we are able to make sure that the facilities that we have are matching that. And one of those important parts, and is making sure that female participation in sport is, if you like, grown through the provision of facilities, but also the mindset shift, which is needed to go. It's not just about building another change room.
It's not just about boys playing footy.
Yeah, exactly. Like I,
it might be your three daughters playing footy.
Well, yeah, they two of those run around playing soccer, and my wife plays soccer. But that's an interesting example. Is how do you make sure that people are able to access those sports and those activities, which will help them to be better people, better connected, lead healthier lifestyles, both physically and mentally, and making sure that we have a robust community. You know, the COVID-19 example shows that the community connections are so important for us as a community. The likes of sporting clubs, which I know last week, so my girls went back to play their first game of soccer since the shutdown. It was the first game of the season. Yeah, the looks on their faces, the joy that brought to them is immeasurable. And I actually myself I got jealous of my wife playing soccer, and I went back to play football or Australian rules football in a masters competition. So the Fremantle Phantoms, based out of North Fremantle, it's a fantastic thing for people to be able to
engage
together
in their local community, the sporting club. Coming back to the council, you're new on it, but you're on a couple of committees. Which committee are you on?
So I put my hand up to go on planning committee in the first instance because I felt that was the thing that I knew least about. So I wanted to use that as a learning opportunity.
Yes.
And certainly learnt plenty in that. I also participate in the risk and audit committee, and I feel that from my corporate background is a strength to come to that committee. And then more recently, it's not a committee, but as part of the city's response to COVID-19, we set up a number of working groups, and one of those is the Economic Development Working Group, and I chair that working group to understand what the city can be doing to help contribute to the economic development or response to the economic impacts post-COVID.
Well, each of those committees' areas of focus, I would hazard a guess, both overlaps and is critical to the COVID response.
Yeah, very much so. That planning aspect, and to go back to the point I was making before in regards to trying to find a way to bring more people into Frio in a reasonable time frame.
Yes.
That planning aspect is strong. The risk and audit aspect, who would have seen this coming? Who would have seen this coming, and how do you plan for that? I'm sure it'll be a focus of how we look at our approach going forward and understanding the robustness of what we do. And yeah, definitely the economic development aspect is that response.
I've written, and certainly in saying to friends and colleagues, I think risk assessment's going to include a significant part for infectious disease control in the future, not just COVID, but anything we've never heard of.
It wasn't on the matrix before, was it?
Not really. Although you went and spoke to the epidemiologists, they meet regularly and have been talking about this thing for the last 100 years. So whether or not it's been COVID-19. But when you went on to council and joined those committees, I'm always interested at the personal level. Did you know many of your now fellow councillors?
When I joined council, I knew a couple of councillors.
Yes.
And I had conversations with them beforehand to understand what council was like and what I might be getting myself in for. But apart from that, I didn't know the other councillors. So I suppose it's like going into any other situation, workplace, community, whatever it might be, trying to understand how everyone else works and being able to explain to them, this is who I am and this is what I bring to the table, and the nuance of the functioning. And it is interesting to sit back and As a new person, I suppose you're given a bit of that opportunity to observe and to see how it comes together. The point you made earlier in regards to the port about people being passionate about Fremantle, and that's what I found on council, is everyone on council is there because they care so much about Fremantle. Of course, there's a spectrum of views of which people hold about what that means for Fremantle, but it's that
love of Fremantle that binds everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, the other side of this, which I find interesting, not just in relation to people like you who have an interest in being and serving the community through a local council, but in political life more generally, state, federal, and other areas, is that if you were trained at a university as an engineer or an accountant or a school teacher, you applied for jobs and you went into those professions and you worked and you got the skills, and if you sought to advance yourself, you'd get your advancement if you were a school teacher on your skills there, not necessarily because you knew a lot about what was going on in dark space, that which might have been a personal interest,
yes,
or because you're interested more broadly in public life. So when people with all of these disparate backgrounds come onto to a council, what do they know about, what did you know about the way local government operated? And we touched on this earlier about the skills one might bring, but do you get taught the processes? Do you read books? Do you sit down with some old hands and have a few coffees and a glass of wine and try and get a feeling of the corporate knowledge?
All of the above.
Oh, good.
All of the above. So there's certainly that part of having that conversation and saying to people, okay, yeah, this is coming up. How does this fit together? There's a lot of observation. Okay, geez, that's interesting. But there is also some compulsory training that is required now of local government members to complete. And it was interesting that when I did run for council, there is a very short thing of essentially, this is what you're getting yourself in for. Do you really want to sign up for this type training?
Oh, right.
But that most probably could be enhanced a little bit with some of the training that you're required to do within your first year to kind of go, this is what local government is about and this is how it functions, to give people that better idea. I feel in having looked and done some of that training so far is that most of that is information that I already had, but there are bits and pieces in there that, whether it be related to conflicts of interest, that you, if you rock up to your first meeting, you kind of go, oh, okay, what's this about? Do I need to say something here? How does that fit in? So
yes,
those kind of elements are most probably things that would be better front-ended. But generally, observation, conversations, and then the formal aspect around that training that you do need to do. And then a bit of that experience that starts to grow. So I'm now, whatever it is, about 8 months in, and I'm starting to feel comfortable in the role. And I'm sure looking back, most probably in another 8 months' time, I'll go, I'm feeling comfortable now. I wasn't feeling comfortable 8 months prior. It's just that growth of information, how it comes
now,
together.
What's the length of your term?
4 years.
And do you think that's an ideal length of time? We've gone that way in state and one would hope eventually federal politics, that the longer period gives people and institutions a greater chance to settle in and develop some policies that are going to work.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's that, particularly for first term, it's very important for that period of embedding,
yes,
understanding how things work. And then I would say there's that period of working to become an effective elected member. The challenge that comes with 4 years, I suppose, is local government isn't something that people do as a full-time job.
No. So how do you manage that?
Yeah, and 4 years is a long period of time. A lot could change for people within that 4 years 4-year period. So I think that's the balance, is to try and make sure that people are able to commit for that period. And, and one of the things that I've observed in my time of coming on is that the ability for people to participate in local government in a formal role is restricted to people who have that time and capacity to do so outside of that. So when I came on to council, I had a couple of important decisions to make about how I focused my efforts. And at the time, I actually decided to cease doing the full-time work that I was doing. And that related to both coming onto council, but where my family was at. And I've taken on the role of being the primary caregiver at home and spend half of my time with my youngest daughter, who's in kindy, and she then goes to school the other half of the week. And the conversation we were having at the beginning between my wife and I about coming onto council was, there's council, there's work, there's family. And when I looked at the entirety of those three things, they were bigger than the space in which I had. My work at the time had international obligations and travel and the like. Council was something that I wanted to do, and family is very important to me. Something had to give. And at my stage in life, it felt like a reasonable point in time to go and say, hey, I'm going to give something else a different go. And the full-time work went. And at least for the next, or this first year of being on council, that will continue that way. And not only have I learnt lots on council, but as a contributor to my family, learnt plenty.
Learning
as well.
Lots there.
Yes.
Well, that's a really interesting readjustment. And it, I'm not sure it's necessarily a Fremantle thing, but it provides me with a nice segue to our final question today. And that is, I love to ask people, particularly people like you who have lived in Fremantle. I think you've lived close to the centre, you live in Hilton, you're involved in things. What is it about Fremantle that you love, that makes you want to live here?
Yeah, I thought you might ask something like that. And I go back, went back in my mind, and Fremantle for me was always, when I grew up, I didn't live in Fremantle, but there was family connections to Fremantle for many years. It was the place we would come to on a Sunday afternoon as a family outing type thing. And then it became, when I was early teenage years, it was the kind of place we could hop onto the bus, come into town, get into trouble, get out of trouble, whatever it was, and then head off. I then, in early 20s, would be out going to music, pubs, venues, experiencing life. Now growing a family here, for me, it's the magic of the place, in that all of those things can come together. Fremantle isn't just one thing for one group of people. Geographically, it's a brilliant spot. We've got the coast, we've got a city centre, and we've got everything that comes with that. But there's a real Fremantle ethos of community, which I think is the most important part, and one of the reasons that I wanted to be on council is I wanted to be part of contributing to that community for Fremantle. So it's that magic of Fremantle, which I don't think is measurable, but it is something that you can feel about the place.
No, it's a beautiful answer. It's a lovely way to finish this conversation. It's been lovely talking to you, Frank.
Thanks
very
Michael.
Much for coming and chatting.
I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.